Hello, Outlander fans. This is Jenny Coco Cure, and welcome to the fifth, I believe it is now, episode of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. Welcome back. If you are new, welcome to the show. I have to say before I get started, guys, that I have noticed that we've been getting more hits than I was expecting that I would be getting. I'm really, really pleased and surprised at how many people are checking me out. So that's really encouraging. I hope you guys continue to like what I'm doing, and I hope the audience grows even more. I even though I have more people, you know, checking me out than I had anticipated, we could do better. We can still do better. So spread the word, guys. Get the word out. I'm still fairly new, still fledgling, trying to get a lot more notice. I know that I do things a little bit differently than a lot of the other podcasters. I'm kind of laid back, and I don't care a whole lot about a lot of the analytical points, or, you know, I try to make it more fun and funny. That's kind of my thing. So if you like that and you like it kind of laid back and you like it kind of just fun and funny instead of always having to be intellectual, which is fine. I love the intellectual shows. Don't get me wrong. I listen to a lot of them myself, but I kind of also like the ratchet. If you don't know what that means, look it up. It's just a little bit of urban slang. What it means, well, I'll explain. What it means is a little, you know, oh God, what is a good way to describe ratchet? It's just a little kind of off the beaten path kind of fun. Okay, it's not that normal stuff. It means something more than that. I'm just trying to be really politically correct here. But at any rate, yeah. So if you like what I'm doing, and if you're, you know, you like the intellectual shows, I'm certainly not discouraging you from listening to those. But you also like a little bit of fun and a little bit of just humor about the whole thing, then hey, check me out. It's only going to get better from here. Trust me. Anyway, this episode of Outlander is entitled Of Lost Things. It is the fourth episode of season 3. It aired on October 1st, 2017. It was written by Tony Graffia and directed by Brendan Mayer. And the episode begins with a title card of a pair of booted feet with spats, and there are some wood shavings dropping to the floor between the booted feet, and the camera slowly pans up, and we see a pair of hands whittling a piece of wood into the shape of a curved snake, a la Sony, right? That's how we pronounce it. So we're thinking, okay, this must be Jamie, right? This is obviously, and he's making himself a new Sony. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? We'll find out, of course, in the episode. So we begin the episode with in 1968 Scotland, which is where we left off in season 2. We see Claire and Roger and Bree in a room just kind of getting some serious research in. You know, they're looking through papers. Roger has a bulletin board up with a whole timeline from the 1740s all the way through the present day. And he's concluding, of course, that the times are parallel, that Jamie's time is parallel with Claire's current time. And Claire is busy looking through some prison registry sheets for Ardsmuir, and she comes across Jamie's name. She lets them know, hey, I found him. They all rush over and see that he has not only been on the registry for Ardsmuir for 1756, for 1753, I think is when he got there, but for subsequent years until the prison closed in 1756. So they're excited. They decide to celebrate with some whiskey. They're really happy that they found him and have confirmed that he was alive, definitely alive, many years after Culloden. Oh, yeah. And I forgot to mention that Fiona at one point when they're doing their little powwow, Fiona, Mrs. Graham was the housekeeper for the Reverend Wakefield. And we met her, of course, in season one. And her granddaughter, Fiona, comes into the room with a tray of treats like she always does, because she's always providing people with some sort of sustenance. But she comes in, she overhears them talking about Jamie, and she says, you know, Jamie could have been the Don Bunnett. He was a notorious outlaw. And they kind of dismiss her, but I just thought that was pretty interesting that she made that connection. And of course, we already know that Jamie actually was the Don Bunnett. But, you know, Brianna, I think, said, you know, the Don Bunnett was just a mythical tale. That wasn't something that was ever proven to be a true story. And of course, the Highlanders were known for mixing a lot of fiction with their facts. So they kind of dismissed that little point that Fiona made. Anyway, after the whole powwow with the Claire and Brianna and Roger, we go back in time to 1756 to Hellwater, England, where we see a caravan of carriages and some carts carrying luggage, lots and lots of luggage. So the caravan pulls up in front of this beautiful mansion where a line of staff, looks like mostly groomsmen, maybe some housekeepers and other people that take care of the mansion, are standing out to greet the Dunsany family. And when they exit their carriage, we see Lord Dunsany, Lady Dunsany, and their two daughters, Geneva and Elizabeth. Lord Dunsany, you know, says hello to his staff. He goes to one of his groomsmen, or one of his, like, maybe one of the leaders of his staff, and he says, I see we have the new groomsmen here. Let me see Mackenzie. Tell him to come into the house and talk to me. So this gentleman goes over to Jamie. We see Jamie for the first time. He is standing there stoically along with the other groomsmen, fallen into that service role very well. But he's standing there with his hair looking pretty shabby, if you ask me. I don't know. There have been people that have speculated that it's a wig, but you know, Jamie has struggled with his hair since season one. So, you know, I mean, does everyone remember? Because I don't think he had as much trouble in season two. But I remember in season one, Sam had a lot of trouble with that hair. The hair was looking frizzy and some and stringy and others, and don't let it get damp. It just looked like a hot mess. And I remember when they did the scene, I think the worst that his hair looked was when they did the scene when he was taking the whipping for Larry, you know, and she, you know, was, you know, doing wrong, and her father wanted her punished, and he took her punishment in front of everyone because she was going to be, I think, spanked. So Jamie took the beating that she was going to get, but he wasn't spanked like a woman. He was beaten with fists. But I just remember so well during that scene looking at his hair and going, gosh darn, they couldn't do better than that. His hair is looking a hot mess. And some people are saying that he's wearing a wig, and maybe he is. If he is wearing a wig, come on, Outlander. Come on, Ron. Come on, whoever is responsible for y'all wigs and costumes, you can do better. Because that little pigtail he had in the back and the hair, you know, pulled around his ears or his face, just looked terrible. I just hate that fucking hair. But anyway, we're going to try not to focus so much on such petty things. At any rate, Jamie is standing there. The gentleman says to him, the Lord would like to speak with you. He goes into the house, meets Lord Dunsany. Lord Dunsany says that he knows that Jamie is a Scottish prisoner, and that
you know, had, that he was an honorable man and that he saved John Gray's, or spared John Gray's life at Preston Pants. He informed Jamie that his son was killed in Preston Pants, and that that was one of the reasons why his wife could not stand Jacobites, because she's never gotten over the death of her son. So they were not going to tell her that he was a Jacobite prisoner, but that he was a groomsman that used to work for Lord John, and he would be getting a small stipend. And Jamie, you know, in reference to him speaking of losing a son, a child, Jamie said, "I understand how that feels because I've lost two children myself." And, you know, the Lord Dunsany looks at him, you know, speculatively. And, you know, Jamie doesn't break that eye contact. You know how he goes. Well, no, let me rephrase. Jamie was not making eye contact with this man. He was actually looking off. I think probably because one of the things that they believe fiercely about servants is that you should not look your boss, for lack of a better word, directly in the eye. If you'll note, in most of this episode, whenever you saw Jamie with one of them, he was usually looking down or looking off to the side, never looking them directly in their eyes. Or if he was looking them directly in their eyes, it was one of those unguarded moments. Okay, so then we leap forward again back to 1968, and Roger and Bree appear to be stranded on the side of the road. Their car has broken down. The hood is up and Roger is underneath trying to fix it. Brianna, I guess, feeling a little bit playful, whatever you want to call it, says in a mocking voice, "Would you like some whipped cream on your scone, Roger?" Which is what Fiona has said to Roger when she was bringing the treats into the room when they were doing their powwow. And Bree says that, "I think she has a crush on you." And Roger's like, "What? Fiona? What are you talking about?" And Bree's like, "It's pretty clear that she likes you. I mean, at first I thought she was your girlfriend." And Roger tries to get from under the hood real quick and he bumps his head. You know, he's obviously very flustered by this bit of information that Bree is giving him. And he's like, no, not Fiona. What? No. He's like, "Look, I have lots of females that are friends, but I do not have a girlfriend." Well, he doesn't say females. He says, "I have lots of girls that are friends, but I do not have a girlfriend. I don't have a girlfriend." So Brianna's giving him that eye, that look, that smile, and, you know, he likes it. He's smiling back at her. So then she looks down at his at what he's doing under the hood, and she's like, let me see what you're doing. Let me see what's happening under here. So she goes over to the car and looks under the hood and notices something and reaches inside, snaps it in place, and then says, "Now try it." So he gets in the car, turns the key, it cranks right up. He asks her, "What did you do?" And she said the distributor cap was loose. Then they get back into the car, but before they climb in, he says something. I'm sure most people, who, especially those who are really observant and maybe understand, you know, Scottish accents really well, know what he said. I am not one of those people. I don't know. I played it back I don't know how many times. My closed captioning isn't working, so I can't use that to tell you what it is. But she says, I'll take you up on it," or something like that, in response. So I don't know what, or "I'll think of something," I think is what she said. So I don't know. I don't know what that was. So anyway, jump back to 1756 in Hellwater, England, with Jamie in the stables. One of the groomsmen comes in and said, "Mackenzie, it's time to draw straws." So he comes out with the other groomsmen. They start drawing straws and they play a little game to see who is going to take Lady Geneva out for her ride on her horse, because no one wants to do it because she is not the nicest person. She comes in. They draw straws, and I think one of the other groomsmen, not Jamie, loses, and he goes, "Darn it," you know. So she walks up shortly thereafter. and says that she's ready to do her ride. The groomsman who lost the draw says, I will be accompanying you, miss. She looks at Jamie, get my horse. So he's like, yes, right away. He goes in there, and he's in there for maybe about 2 or 3 seconds. But she just wants to complain because she's in a foul mood, probably all the time. And she says, hurry, you useless Scotchman. Now, in my quick review, my quick recap, this is one of the things I got wrong. I just want to let everybody know, by the way, on my quick recaps, I'm going to get a lot of stuff wrong. I'm going to get names wrong. I'm going to get dates wrong. I'm going to get scenes wrong. I'm going to forget stuff because the purpose of the quick review is not to be right necessarily, or not even to be, okay, let me rephrase. It's not that I want to be wrong. It's just that this is the initial reaction after I have watched the episode one time. When you watch an episode of anything one time, there are going to be some things that you have forgotten or maybe did not catch on the first watch. You have to watch it 2 or 3 more times before you can say for certain that you've probably caught everything. So now that I've watched it a few times, and yes, I'm also a book reader. So yeah, you're probably thinking, well, you should know names because you read the books. Well, like I said before, I haven't reread Outlander in a long time. It's been a couple of years, I think, since the last time I read a Voyager. Okay. I will say this though. I did think about it, and I'm actually probably going to be breaking Voyager out, dusting off my copy, breaking it out, and starting to at least skim through it so that I can refresh my memory on a lot of things about what happens in the book as opposed to what happens on the show, so I can do more accurate comparisons. Because I think some of the stuff that I might have said on previous episodes might have been questionable at best because it has been so long since I've read the books. I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, I need to dust off my copy of Outlander and just skim through, you know, and especially on the parts that are coming up on the show. So when I do my book versus show comparisons, they're more accurate and not as questionable. Okay. But anyway, this Miss Geneva, you know, calls Jamie a useless Scotsman. I had said, like I said in my quick recap, that she called him a sorry Scotsman. No, she said useless Scotchman is what she calls him. Anyway, he's in there getting a horse. He hears this and he's like, okay. And he gets the horse, brings it out and lets her take it. They ride off, her and the other groomsmen. And as they are riding off, Jamie is standing next to another groomsman. And he says, that one needs her hind quarters tanned or something along those lines. And her sister, Elizabeth, is approaching. She overhears this and she goes, which one needs their hind quarters tanned, the horse or my sister? So Jamie and the other groomsmen are flustered to have been overheard, and they bow quickly. And Jamie apologizes, and she says, that's okay. You know, I get it. My sister's a handful, you know. So anyway, she comes over to Jamie, and she's they're looking at these horses being walked by. And he's like, should I get your horse? And she's like, no, I just came down here to check the horses out. They're so magnificent. She's looking at the horses as they walk by. And Jamie's looking with her. And she says, they're such magnificent creatures. It's a shame that my father keeps them, you know, imprisoned or keeps them locked up. And Jamie's like, well, you know, Hellwater stables are one of the finest stables I've ever seen. And I've seen some stables. And she's like, a prison is still a prison. Jamie looks at her like, oh, you got a point there. So she says to him, so how long were you working for Lord John Grey? And Jamie said he had been under Lord John Grey's charge for a little over a year. And she's like, I find him to be the most fascinating man, you know, so interesting. I think he'll make a woman a fine husband one day. And Jamie gives her this look like, look, Lord John is a soldier, and military and being a husband don't often mix well. And he's really dedicated to soldiering. That's his life. And she says, well, that's one of the things that I admire about him, his love for country, you know, and his dedication to country. That's one of the things that I admire about him most, you know. And Jamie kind of smiles at her like, okay, all right, I hear you, girl. So, yeah, that was a nice moment. This is where you get the impression of the difference between the two sisters. One is a brat. One is nasty and mean. But the other, Elizabeth, Geneva, of course, is the nasty, mean one. Elizabeth is the nicer one, the kinder one, the one that has more compassion and empathy, even for the animals. I mean, she's it's like her sister and her opposite sides of the same coin, just completely different from one another. Then we jump forward again to 1968. We're at the Wakefield house. Claire is sitting in front of the fire enjoying a book, and Roger comes downstairs just as the telephone rings. He goes to answer it. After a moment, he puts it down and comes over to Claire and tells her that it's the hospital in Boston. She gets up to answer the phone, and it is her good friend from Boston at the hospital, Joe Abernathy. And he calls her Lady Jane. Now, I will make an observation here. I know I said I wasn't going to try to be petty, but is anyone checking Claire's hair? Yeah, we got another hair thing going on. I don't know what it is. It's like hair in this episode just got bad. I mean, Jamie's hair looked better in prison than it does now. That is clean. I mean, it looks kind of clean, right? It looks clean for the most part. I guess he washes it. And Claire's hair, when she was, you know, well, I'll tell you. When Claire first went to the, when she was in her first year of college, and she, you know, met the professor in that class that one time, and he said, oh, great, a woman, you know, I've got you and a Negro or something like that. Does anyone remember her hair in that scene? Her hair looked a mess and a half. Like, what in the world was that? I don't know what it was. It was like she just kind of mussed her hair all around and then put pins in the back. It just looked like a horror show. But in this episode, her hair is molded and sculpted into this weird, bob. I think it is a bob. It's one of those high-sitting, extremely stiff hairsprayed bobs like they wore in the 60s. Not an uncommon look, so they definitely have that part right. It's just so unflat. I just don't like it. It's like every time she moves, it's like it all kind of moves as one unit. Like whenever she turns her head, the hair moves as one unit. It's not like strands or locks moving, you know, loosely as they should or flowing. Nope, it's sealed. Her hair is sealed into place, you know. It's just weird. But anyway. She gets on the phone and, you know, sees that it's Joe, her good guy, her friend, her doctor friend from home. And Joe, you know, they kind of joke about what he's eating. And he says, can you guess what I'm eating? She says, I bet it's chicken cacciatore. He's like, you know me so well. So anyway, he tells her about this, patient of hers that has developed some problem and is going to require surgery. And she was like, oh, okay. And she looks concerned, but then she says, well, you know, Joe, you can handle it. You got it. He's like, well, yeah, I know I got it, but I thought you would want to handle it. This is your patient. And she was like, no, I'm still here in Scotland. I can't do it. You got it, you know, and I have confidence in you. But I got to go. Okay. Later. Peace. And she hangs up on him. Very rude, by the way, the way she does that. Very quick and very abrupt. I'm like, okay, goddamn, you can't let the guy speak, but okay. And then she, you know, turns and looks concerned. And you can tell that she's thinking, is she doing the right thing? Is she making a mistake? She's neglecting her responsibilities at home, and it's starting to affect her. So then we jump back in time. Now it is 1757. And we see Lord Dunsany, Lady Dunsany, the two daughters, Elizabeth and Geneva, and another older gentleman walking down the steps coming out of the house. And Lord Dunsany is saying he thinks this is going to be a wonderful arranged marriage. He's talking about this older gentleman being married off to his daughter, Geneva. He says Geneva will make a fine wife. So does Lady Dunsany. She agrees. And the gentleman, the lord, says to the wife, Lady Dunsany, he says, you know, my wife said that I shouldn't marry someone with such a petty personality or something along those lines. But then he says, I find her personality to be refreshing. So as they're approaching the lord's carriage, they see that Jamie is cleaning one of the horse's hoofs, and the lord looks at Jamie and goes, hurry up, I don't have all day. And Jamie's like, it'll just be another moment. And the lord looks at Lord Dunsany and goes, my God, if I had a child whose hair was that color, I'd drown him before he took a second breath. I'm like, okay, redheaded hate. All right, that's cool. Whatever, whatever, whatever floats your boat, lord. So anyway, he turns toward Geneva and takes her hand, kisses it, and says, farewell, my lady. Only a fortnight before you are mine. And she has this look on her face like, oh, God. So then he loads up in his carriage and drives off. Jamie is still standing there. The others go into the house. But Geneva kind of stays behind and stares at Jamie. Jamie looks at her, gives her a little nod, and then he walks off. She's staring after him. And you can tell something's on her mind. So anyway, then they have the next scene where Jamie's in the stable and they're drawing straws again with the other groomsmen. Jamie wins again, doesn't lose. One of the other groomsmen has a short straw, so he goes to take the horse that belongs to Geneva to get it ready for her ride. And Geneva comes in and goes, no, I want Mackenzie to ride with me today. So, you know, the groomsman that lost was pretty happy about that. The other groomsman, as Geneva goes outside, laugh at Jamie as he has to take Geneva's horse and get it ready for her ride. So then we see Geneva and Jamie riding through the woods. On horseback, Geneva says, so, what do you think of my betrothed? And Jamie says, I don't think of such things. Well, no. Jamie says, it's not my place to give an opinion. And she says, I demand that you give an opinion. And he says, well, I think he's fond of you. And she goes, the only attractive thing about him is his money. And she says, so what are you attracted to, Mackenzie? And he goes, I don't think of such things. She says, liar. She's giggling. He gives her this look like, you know, like a side eye. And he's like, okay, I see where this is going. Not happening. He says, look, lady, we need to get back before it gets dark. She's like, we have time. I'm not ready to go back yet. And she says, and by the way, you have to do my bidding. So follow me. So she, strikes her horse and makes him start trotting into a full gallop. And Jamie follows her, but he's not in no real hurry to keep up. You know, he's kind of like, huh, I'm not in the mood for this. And she's, you know, galloping along, you know, way ahead of him. And he's, you know, falling behind. But then he hears her scream. And then he speeds up a little bit to catch up and sees that she has fallen off her horse onto the ground. So he gets off his horse. I remember when I did a quick recap, I said that he jumps off the horse and runs over to her. Nah. Jamie act like he barely give a damn. You know, he gets off his horse. He walks over to her like, okay, hope she ain't dead. Oh, well, let me go see what's up. You know, he is not concerned. So he leans down and he's like, Miss, are you okay? He shakes her one time. She doesn't respond. So he picks her up, begins to carry her, probably to take to his horse so he can take her back home. She starts to giggle, talking about, I told you I could make you do my bidding. And he looks at her. He gives her this disgusted look. And then with the most beautiful, unceremonious, just relieving of his arms, he just lowers his arms and lets her fall flat out into a mud puddle at his feet, face down. It's very funny. It's very satisfying. Then he walks off. He steps over her, by the way, steps over her like she ain't nothing. And then goes to his horse to get ready to leave. And she gets up out of the mud and she's covered in it. And she's like, ha, ha, ha. She says, I look forward to our next ride, Mackenzie. And he looks at her like, yeah, you are nuts, and just keeps going. He rides off. She's laughing. I'm really surprised, though, that she found this so amusing. I'm trying to remember the book. I don't remember if, I cannot remember if this happened. See, this is why I should have did a recent reread. Because I can't recall if this scene was in the book where he drops her in the mud. If so, I'm completely forgetting it. But the Geneva in the book, I don't believe, laughed. If this did happen in the book, I am pretty sure there wouldn't have been a laugh. Maybe she didn't, you know, tell on him or anything because she doesn't want him to get into trouble because she has a crush. But I doubt that her reaction was laughter. I could be wrong. When I do my reread, I'm definitely going to skim through to this part to see how it went down. So then we flash forward a little bit, same time, to Jamie and Lord John Grey somewhere off in the woods playing chess. Lord John says to Jamie that he has heard from the Dunsanies that he's doing a great job. Jamie smiles at Lord John and goes, all these months and you're still checking on my welfare? Or maybe you just don't have anybody else to play chess with? And Lord John jokes, well, no one that's worthy. So then they hear people approaching. They stand up. It turns out to be Elizabeth and Geneva escorting a redcoat. At first, at least I didn't recognize who it was, but it turns out to be Lord Milton, who happens to be Lord John's older brother, the same man that released Jamie from being executed on the field of Culloden, or at least right after Culloden. And sent him home because he was saving his brother's honor. So when Geneva says, Lord Milton, you must know Mackenzie. And the Lord looks at Jamie, recognizes him immediately and goes, oh, yeah. Yeah, I sure do. But it's been a long time. And then Elizabeth said something about Mackenzie was recommended to us by Lord John. And she's giving Lord John the eye. She's making it real clear that she's attracted to him. Then Geneva says something else snarky. And something about them freeing Mackenzie, you know, from prison or whatever. And Lord Milton says, if it were up to me, I wouldn't free such people. And he looks at his brother with a look of, I guess, surprise, disappointment, whatever you want to call it. And he says, but I am not my brother. So there's a tense moment. And Geneva, you know, notices this, but then she says, let's go and have a drink, you know, and get out of here and have some fun or whatever. So they walk away with Lord Milton and, you know, Jamie and Lord John give each other this look that obviously says, yeah, that was unpleasant. Now, my thoughts on this scene, I think, and I have heard, I'm not going to say who was of this opinion, but I did listen to another show, and on that show, the opinion was expressed that the brother looked at Lord John and Jamie like they might be having an affair, and he was disgusted by it. I didn't pick any of that up. I just picked up that the brother was surprised to see Jamie, being that Jamie was there instead of in prison where he belongs. He had no idea that the brother had released him and had him, you know, kind of working this cushy job and being free, essentially. Free to leave or free to escape if he was so inclined. That's all I picked up from this. I did not pick up anything about the brother thinking that something was going on between Jamie and Lord John. But I guess that's an interesting theory. Perhaps that was what happened and I just didn't catch that. But even after I watched it like 3 times, I still didn't really catch that vibe. I didn't sense that that's what the issue was. So then in the next scene, we have Jamie is, you know, pushing a wheelbarrow filled with manure in the barn, and he's doing his groom's duties, and he's down in the stables, and Lady Geneva comes down, and when he sees her, you can see he has this look on his face like, oh God, here she come. So he's just, you know, kind of rolling his little wheelbarrow along, pushes it over to the side. He's with another groomsman. They bow. The other groomsman walks off, and she says to Mackenzie, oh, Jamie, you don't have to do all those formalities with me. You know, we good. She's like, okay. So he's shoveling stuff, and she's like, what are you doing? He looks at her and very clearly says, shoveling shit, m'lady. She goes, my goodness. Okay, well, you know, I could have told my father that you dropped me in the mud. You know, you're lucky that I'm such a compassionate woman. And he says, yeah, I'm so freaking lucky. So he keeps shoveling. And she's like, and you know, Lord Milton says some interesting things about you. You know, after he had 2 or 3 glasses of port, you know, his tongue was loosened quite a bit and told us about who you really are, Red Jamie. And he turns around and looks at her. No, wait a minute. I'm jumping ahead. My bad. Let me go back. So he says, after she says that he's lucky that she didn't tell her father that he dropped her in the mud, and she gives herself a compliment saying that she's so compassionate. He says, yeah, I'm really lucky that you're so compassionate. She then says something along the lines of, I think she references her getting married in a little while. And he said, congratulations. And she said, congratulations, I'm marrying an old man, a man old enough to be my grandsire. And, you know, Jamie is basically like, I don't care. And she's like, have you ever been married? And he's like, aye. She's like, good. So then you'll know what to do when you come to my bed. And he looks at her and he walks up to her and he's like, are you out of your mind? If you had one to lose. And then he turns to walk away and she's like, how dare you speak to me that way? And he was like, how dare you speak to me that way? So what kind of woman approaches a groomsman and makes an indecent proposition? You know, who does that? And she's like, look, don't talk down to me. I know things about you. Lord Milton told me that who you really are, Red Jamie. And, you know, then she starts getting all threatening and stuff. And she brings up, you know, his family and Lollybrock and all the stuff that Lord John or Lord Milton apparently decided he wanted to spill. And she says, you know, it's a shame if your prison sentence is revoked or your parole is revoked and you're sent back to prison. He's like, I'm not going back to prison. She's like, yeah, well, you could go back to prison. And she says, and if you were to run, well, then we'd have to send some redcoats over to Lollybrock and look for you. And that could be a real mess. And he's got this tense look on his face like, you son of a gun. So she's like, come to my bed tonight, you know. And she walks off and he's like, okay, all right. All right, we gonna do this. That's cool. So later that night, Jamie sneaks into the darkened house, which is really amazing. No one is there. He's actually kind of noisy as he's doing so. He opens the side door very noisily, closes it, then kind of clunks away with boots making noise on the wood floor. I'm like, God, this is okay. You know, because, of course, in the book, he climbs out, I think, up the side of the wall and sneaks into her window, which seems a lot more sensible, more stealthy. But guess that was a little bit too much trouble, so they decided to just let him walk into the house. So he goes into her room, and she's standing there with her white robe on. And he walks in and he's like, okay, I'm here. And she's like, thank you for coming, Jamie. And he says, nah, don't call me by the name my family calls me. Call me Alex. That's one of my names too. She's like, okay, well, take your clothes off. So he starts to get undressed and, you know, she kind of turns away like she doesn't want to watch him. And he looks at her like, he's like, look, we finna get busy, so you can watch me get naked if you want. So she turns and looks at him as he continues to take off his clothes. When he gets to his shirt, pulls it over his head, his back is to her, and she sees his back. She gasps when she sees his back, and he's like, yeah, don't worry, it doesn't hurt anymore. So then, you know, at this point, he turns to face her front, and she, you know, is looking down his body and checks out the package. So he's like, okay, let's get started, shall we? So he approaches her and starts to touch her. And I think at one point she says, I don't know what to do. And he says, we don't have to do this. You can change your mind if you don't want to. And he says, no, she said, no, I want to do this. I'm doing this for me. I want my first time to be with someone like you. And he says, well, you know, the first time can be daunting. She says, just show me what I need to do. So he takes her hands, place them on his chest. By the way, anyone notice that scar where he cut off the brand from Black Jack Randall is no longer there. It's like completely healed or missing. Shouldn't that like be like a really like forever scar on his chest? I guess the makeup people forgot to add that. They did the back scars, but they forgot the chest scar. And then there's the neck scar from when he got shot in the neck when he and Claire first met and she, you know, patched it up for him. I would imagine that would leave a scar. But other than the scars on his back, he has absolutely no scars. His skin is flawless. So anyway, you know, he puts her hands on his chest to touch him and kind of leads her hands down his body. And then they start to kiss, which, by the way, is pretty intense. And then he reaches behind her and grabs her bottom. And, you know, she asks him, is it going to hurt? He says, if he takes his time, it won't be so bad. So, you know, he takes her robe off, backs her up onto the bed. You know, he gets on her, you know, he's really into it. I must say, Jamie is being forced, but not really. Because, I mean, okay, he's being forced, but he's taking a really active and willing and, well, God, how do I put this? Is it really willing, though? I don't know. He seems to be kind of into it. At least that's how it appears to the eye if you're watching it. So at any rate, you know, he's getting down with it. He's like licking on her boobs and, you know, just getting into it. And she asks, can I touch you? And he says, yeah. She reaches down between them and I guess grabs his junk. And before long, they're in the throes of the whole, you know, sex thing. And, you know, he's pumping away. And when it's over with, he rolls over on his side next to her. They stare at each other. And she says, I love you, Alex. And he's like, yeah, that's not love you feel. He says, that's just feelings I raised in your body. They're strong, but it's not love. And she's like, what's the difference? And he says, well, love is that feeling you have with another person where you give your entire body and soul to them and your heart and soul to them, and they give you theirs in return. And he's kind of looking off, and you know he's thinking about Claire because that's the only woman he has ever loved and will ever love. Anyway, next scene is it's another day. Apparently, several months have passed. Geneva has all obviously gone off and married her Lord Ellesmere. She's been gone apparently for, you know, a little while with her new husband. So they arrive by a carriage to the house. Jamie and the other groomsmen run to meet the carriage. And Jamie is the one that opens the door for her to climb out. Now, the way the camera's angled, you can't really see much. It's just her climbing out. Jamie lowers his head like he's supposed to, like a good servant. Looks down at the ground as she gets out of the carriage. And followed closely by Lord Ellesmere, her husband. And they get out and go greet their, you know, family, her family, and say hello. And then she turns, and we can see that her belly is swollen with child, quite swollen. And when Jamie gets a look at this, he is quite stunned and I'm sure quite worried about this. Then we go back to 1968. We skip forward to 1968. I'm going to try to wrap this up, guys, because it's late. I'm trying to get this uploaded before the day is over. I wanted to get this up earlier, but work, once again, made it difficult. So I'm trying to get this up, so I'm going to just speed along. So we go back to 1968, and Fiona approaches Claire and says that she has something that belongs to her. And it turns out to be the freshwater pearls that Jamie, or the Scotch pearls that Jamie had given to her on their wedding night. And she said, I gave these to Mrs. Graham years ago. And Fiona was like, yes, yes, I know. And grandmother gave them to me, and now I'm giving them back to you because they belong to you. And Claire thanked her. You know, so she's looking at him and obviously reminiscing and thinking about when Jamie gave them to her on her wedding night. I gotta say, just like I said when I did the quick recap, all the stuff right now that's happening in the 60s, the 1960s, I am so not caring about. I'm just not caring about it. Yeah, they're trying to find Jamie. I get it, blah, blah, blah. But all this other side stuff, like, maybe this moment will have some meaning later. But at this point now, it just seems like a random scene that was just kind of thrown in there for filler. I don't know what the significance of this is and why it was put in this place at this time. Maybe somebody else can figure out what it means. I am at a loss. So then Claire, you know, meanders into the next room looking at the pearls, and she sees Brianna. Brianna gets up and says, "Mom, guess what? The National Archives has the largest ship manifest in the country, and we can catch a train to Edinburgh tomorrow. Apparently they need to check these ship manifests to see if Jamie it might be on any of it." Claire's like, "Yeah, that's great." She's obviously kind of distracted looking at the pearls. She's not really feeling this, you can tell, anymore. And Brianna asks her, "What's wrong, Mama?" And she goes, Claire looks at her, "You haven't called me that in years." And she gives Brianna a hug. And, well, I don't know if Claire's thing is that she's not feeling it or if it's just that she's just reflecting. She's doing a lot of reflection. Maybe, I don't know. I'll be honest with you, I can't tell. The way the show is trying to make it seem is that she's just, maybe she feels like she's getting closer, or maybe she's being distracted, or maybe she's, I can't tell. Well, my personal opinion is that she is torn. She wants to find Jamie, of course. She wants to find out whether or not he's still alive. But then also, she's torn about her life in the present. And there's still lots of things that she has to do. She's established a whole life. She has a daughter who she feels still needs her. She has patients at the hospital that need her. She's a talented surgeon. She just... at this point is just wondering what she should do. So anyway, in the next scene, Roger and Brianna are sitting on a couch in front of the fire. And Brianna says, "I'm a terrible person." Roger says, "Okay, yeah, well, we agree on that." So she laughs at it, you know, lightheartedly. But she says, "You know, I'm afraid that if my mom finds Jamie, she's going to go back and I'm going to lose her." And then he says to her, Well, I guess that makes me a terrible person, too, because if she finds Jamie, then that means you guys are going to leave. And so I'm hoping that you don't find him." So then she kisses him. And it's kind of a awkward kiss. It's kind of a my lips bump yours and we're going to pretend like that was hot, but it wasn't kiss. So Brianna smiles at him and he says, "Well, that was unexpected." And she's like, "Yeah." So I guess they're developing their little relationship, what have you. Now, in the book, at Voyager, Brianna and Roger's relationship develops pretty nicely. It's very convincing. I'm still, the ball is still... the jury's still out, is that it? Okay, yeah, I think that's it. The jury is still out on Brianna and Roger on the show. Show Roger and show Brianna and their whole connection relationship. I'm not buying it so far. I know that they're going to be together, will be together, you know, that, I mean, spoiler alert, hey, I don't think that's really a spoiler. I think most people know this already, but they're going to have to work on that connection. It's just, I'm just not feeling it. I think they need to warm it up some kind of way. I don't know how they'll accomplish it, but it's needed, the warm up. So we flash back after this scene back to 1757, or maybe it's 58 by now. since, you know, Geneva is so pregnant. But anyway, the sister, Elizabeth, is running outside to the stables. She finds Jamie, knocks on his door, and he opens it for her. And she's like, hurry, get the horses. My sister's having the baby, but she's in distress. We need to go to the Ellesmere home, you know, quickly. So Jamie gets the horses ready, get the carriages ready. And they rush to the Ellesmere home. When they get there, you know, Jamie is asking the maid, how is the lady, what's going on? And the maid tells him that the lady is okay and the baby is a boy. He's fine. Jamie is taken aback by the news that she had a boy, which of course means now he has a son. Flash forward a little bit later when Jamie comes upon Elizabeth in the hallway crying, and he approaches her, you know, concerned, obviously, asking what's wrong. She says, my sister is dead. Jamie is stunned. He's like, what happened? And she's like, well, she was sitting up in the bed. She was okay. She was holding the baby and talking. But then she started to bleed again, and the physician did everything he could, but he just couldn't stop the bleeding. So she starts crying harder, and Jamie comes to comfort her, but she slaps him, and she says, don't touch me. I know that the baby was yours. She and Lord Ellesmere never even lay together. You know, she was in love with you. And Jamie is looking at her speechless. He doesn't know what to say. And then suddenly we hear a commotion coming from downstairs, and both of them go running. They find that Lord Ellesmere is holding the baby with a dagger in his hand, and standing across from him are Lord and Lady Dunsany. They're arguing. Lord Ellesmere is upset, saying that he was promised a virgin, but he got a whore who was already pregnant when she got to him. And the father and Lord Dunsany is like, no, you're crazy. No, that's not true. How dare you take that back? And Lord Ellesmere is like, I will not. She said, he said, are you sure the baby wasn't yours? So when he says that, Lord Dunsany was like, oh, hell no. He took his gun out and aimed it at him. Jamie finally gets there, and he jumps in between them, and he's like, look, you gentlemen, you need to calm down, put your weapons down. So he looks at Lord Dunsany and reaches for his gun. Come on, sir, please, put your weapon down. So Lord Dunsany very gradually, you know, turns over his gun to Jamie, and then Jamie starts to try to approach Lord Ellesmere to get his knife, but Lord Ellesmere backs up with the baby. He says, uh-uh, no. He says, you're not gonna take my weapon. And the Lady Dunsany is like, just let us take the baby and we'll let you mourn in peace. And apparently that makes him snap, Lord Ellesmere. He says, I'll kill this bastard before I let you get your hands on him. And he raises a knife like he's going to stab the baby, and Jamie just very quickly shoots him in the head. He falls to his death. The baby falls on top of his body, so he's not hurt. Jamie rushes over, picks the baby up. The baby opens his eyes, and Jamie was like, yep, thank God, you know, the baby's okay. So, okay, something else happens after that. Let me see.
So then in the next scene, we see Elizabeth pushing the baby in a beautiful stroller in the woods. She's wearing all black and mourning for her sister. She comes upon Jamie and a couple of other groomsmen riding horses, and she asks to speak to him for a moment. He hops down and, you know, stays with her as the other groomsmen take the horses away. And he walks up kind of close to the stroller and sees the baby inside. And he asks her, how's the wee one? And she says, we named him William after my father. We call him Willie. And of course, Jamie smiles and, of course, reminded that that is his brother, his older brother's name as well. He said, that's a fine name. And the baby starts to complain a little bit. So she picks him up out of the carriage and holds him. Jamie can get a good look at his face at this point. And she says, I'm really sorry. I was really mad that day. I was very upset. My sister could be very difficult. I understand it's not your fault. You know, and they look behind them and see that Lady Dunsany is now approaching. She's also decked all in black and a couple of maids are with her. So Elizabeth puts Willie back in his carriage and she walks away and lets Lady Dunsany approach Jamie. Lady Dunsany tells him that the coroner's trial. Now, in the quick recap, I thought that this was like a trial, like a court trial, but apparently no, it is simply like a coroner's trial, which is like, I think, like an autopsy. I think that's basically essentially what this is. So anyway, she says that it was discovered that the Lord Ellesmere was so stricken with grief after the death of his wife. He took his own life. Of course, it's not what happened, but that's what the coroner came to as a decision. Of course, they set that up. They made sure that, you know, that happened that way so that Jamie wouldn't get in trouble. And she says, I know who you are, and I don't know your name, but I know you're a Jacobite. I don't care. You saved my family. You saved my grandson. And we're grateful. We have connections in England, or rather with the throne, with the crown, and we can set it up where you can be pardoned and you can go home to Scotland. Would you like that? And Jamie, well, okay, I'm sorry. I skipped a part. I skipped this in the quick review. I wanted to capture this in the full review. Before Lady Ellesmere approaches him to talk to him about the coroner's trial and all of that, as Elizabeth walks away, Jamie looks down into the crib with Willie, looking at Willie, and says, you're a braw laddie, so wee. Do not fash yourself. I'm here. You know, basically assuring Willie that he was going to be there to watch over him. So when Lady Dunsany offers this great gift of his ability to go back to Scotland, of course he's excited, very excited. But then he looks down at Willie in the crib or in the carriage and he says, I cannot go back right now. And she asks why. He's like, because Scotland is still pretty bad off. Things are not that well there. I'd prefer to stay here and work and send money home to my family, if that's all right with you. And she says, that's fine. And they accept that as his decision. But she says, when you decide to leave, you only have to ask. So he appreciates that, of course.
So we flash forward several years, still in Scotland. It is now 1764, and Willie is about a, I don't know, 6 or 7 year old, and we see him riding on a pony being led around by Jamie. Jamie is teaching him how to ride, and Lady Dunsany and a lady friend of hers are off to the side watching, and Lady Dunsany makes a comment. Well, they both at first make comments about how handsome Willie is and how well he rides. And Lady Dunsany says, you know, we have a running joke around here that Mackenzie is spending so much time with Willie that Willie is starting to look like him.
And then the other woman says, you know, that's funny. You're right. They do. And Jamie kind of overhears this and looks very concerned. Flash forward a bit. Willie and Jamie are still hanging out. They're cleaning the carriage. Jamie asks Willie to clean the inside. And the boy gets in. And Jamie closes the door to the carriage. And there's a glass window. And you can see Willie on the inside cleaning the window. And Jamie is on the other side. Sees his reflection. And you can see Willie inside the carriage through the window and Jamie in the reflection, and he's comparing their faces and he's noticing that they look alike. Now, I have seen a lot of people, you know, online, social media, what have you, talking about they don't look anything alike. Guys, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, it's always iffy. Well, not always. Sometimes they do manage to get actors that look like the people that they're supposed to be the children of or the parent of or what have you. Sometimes they do manage to pull it off where they can find a child actor or they can find someone that favors someone enough to look like a relative. But most of the time, we just have to fake it. We have to fake it. We have to pretend. Oh, yes, yes, Willie looks exactly like Jamie. So, you know, that never bothers me. I always understand that this is just a show. It is not reality. You have to use your imagination sometimes. So anyway, later, Jamie is walking with Willie and he tells Willie, I have to go back to Scotland. And Willie is like, why? And Jamie's like, it's just time. And Will is like, well, I want to go with you. And Jamie's like, no, you can't go. And he says, but I want to. And Jamie's like, no. And Willie decides to throw a little tantrum. He's running around. Jamie says, stop. And he chases him and grabs him and tries to get him to stop. But he's kicking over buckets and stuff. He's just being a real brat. And Jamie's like, Willie, I told you no. And Willie's like, I'm sorry, Jamie was the one that said, Willie, I told you no. And Willie was like, you can't go. I'm your master. You have to do as I say. And Jamie responds some kind of way, you know, I don't know, trying to teach him something. And then Willie says, I hate you. And Jamie is like, I don't like you very much right now either, you wee bastard. And Willie's like, I'm not a bastard. Take it back. And Jamie, you know, kind of looks regretful and says, you're right. I apologize. I should never have said that. So then Jamie kind of kneels down and just tries to soften it up a little bit, saying, look, it's just time for me to go. And, you know, you just have to accept it, whatever. And Willie and he have a hug, you know, and Willie tells him he's going to miss him and all of that. At least I think that's what happens. Sorry, guys, I'm fading out. I'm just trying to get this wrapped up. Anyway, in the next scene, we have Elizabeth and Lord John. They're, I guess, standing near or inside the stable as Jamie comes in. And Lord John asks Elizabeth, could he just be alone with Jamie for a moment and talk to him? And she says, okay, and she leaves. And then Lord John says to Jamie, I hear Willie's upset with you. And Jamie just kind of smirks and like, okay, whatever. And Lord John says, so I guess I'm losing my chess partner. But you know you have your right to go. Because we all have secrets and yours is walking around. Anyone with two eyes can see it. He has the same cock to his head, the same set to his shoulders. And he has your eyes. You know, and pretty soon Willie's going to notice. So Jamie kind of stands there. He looks real, real thoughtful. And then he says, let's go for a walk. So they're walking in the woods. And Jamie says to Lord John, he says, I would like you to take care of Willie, you know, as his father. And if you do so,
I'll let you, you know. And Lord John is like, no, I don't know. And Jamie's like, I'll let you have me. Lord John is like, you're offering me your body to do this. And Jamie's like, yeah. Lord John is like, to live to hear such an offer, but I can't believe that you think that I would accept something like that. And Jamie's like, you don't want me? And Lord John was like, I should want you till the day I die, but not like that, not that way. Oh Lord, I am so forgetting everything. Let's just wrap this up, guys. I apologize. This is not going to be the best episode because I am fading fast. It's late and I need to get this wrapped up. So at any rate, they come to the understanding that Willie will be taken care of by Lord John. Lord John is going to marry Elizabeth. Jamie is, of course, kind of shocked by this and was like, are you sure you can do that? And he's like, hey, marriage isn't always about sex. I'm fond of Elizabeth, so it'll work out. Plus, I can take care of Willie. Jamie shakes his hand and thanks him profusely for this. Back in Scotland, 1968, Claire and Brianna and Roger are at the National Archives. And they sit down to look through the ship manifest and realize that the years are all screwed up. They're 100 years back, like the 1630s and 40s. And Clara's like, what's going on here? We're the 1700s. That's the years we need. And Roger goes up to the librarian, I guess, or whoever is running the place and asks if they have any other years. And she's like, no, you've got everything we have. So when he goes back over to Claire and tells her, she's upset. And later they're at a bar and they're drinking. And it's mostly men there. All these men are looking at them like they are crazy. Why are you at the bar? And Claire's like, this is 1968. We can sit at the bar we want to. Because apparently this is not something that's done. Women don't usually sit at the bar. And Bree doesn't understand because there's a woman who's like reading poetry off to the side. But Roger explains that she's just entertainment. Nobody cares about that. But sitting at the bar is considered something different. So Claire doesn't care. And they remain seated. Don't let anybody, you know, convince them that that they're not going to be able to sit there. So when the lady poet who's doing the poetry wraps up her poem and says something about freedom and whiskey, which is the name of the episode, by the way. No, the name of the episode is called... of Lost Things. I believe the next episode is Freedom and Whiskey. So my bad. Sorry about that. But anyway, Claire smiles after the woman wraps up her poem and says to Bree, I used to quote Freedom and Whiskey to Jamie all the time. And Bree says, and you'll do it again. Don't worry. We're going to find him. And Claire shakes her head and she says, Mrs. Graham warned me about this, about chasing ghosts. Then she holds up her glass of whiskey, I guess. And she says, to those we've lost, and they all toast and take a drink. And Claire says, Bree, it's time to go home. And Bree looks at her, okay. And so, you know, they've decided to wrap up their mission because they've hit a dead end, they're discouraged, and they're going to go back home. All right, so we're back in 1764 Scotland. It's nighttime, and Jamie is in his room, and he's taking out his candles and his figurine so that he can set it up to do his prayers. But there's a knock at the door. He immediately puts his figurine away. And Willie comes in, and Jamie's like, what are you doing here? And Willie is like, I just came to see you. Can I stay for a bit? And Jamie's like, okay, for a bit. So Willie closes the door, comes in. And Jamie continues to set up his little candles and his figurine.
And Willie looks at it and he goes, my grandma says that only stinking papists burn candles in front of heathen images. And Jamie smirks and he says, well, I'm a stinking papist, but that's no heathen. And he points to the figurine and he says, that's Saint Paul, I think, the patron saint of lost things. I think he said Saint Paul, Saint Anthony, I guess. The patron saint of lost things. Then he proceeds to light his candles and he said, I light a candle for everyone I've lost. And Willie said, who did you lose? And Jamie says, my brother, my sister, my godfather, and my wife. And Willie's like, you don't have a wife. Jamie's like, not anymore. Now, what struck me about this scene is when he said his sister, and I'm like, what does he mean, his sister? Because, I mean, okay, and I'm saying this because in the book, Jamie and Jenny are corresponding with each other while he's doing this groomsman's job, and they're writing letters back and forth. And one of the things that a lot of fans complained about with this story is that they changed a lot of stuff from how it happened in the book. In the book, instead of Geneva blackmailing Jamie by saying that Lord Milton told her about him and who he was, what happens was that Jamie had been, you know, sneaking letters out and letting, like, I think, like some gypsy post send the letters home to Lallybroch. And that is how Jenny knew where he was. And they were corresponding back and forth the whole time he was there. And one of the letters was intercepted by Geneva. And she told him that she had the letter and that there were some interesting things in it. And what would her father say if he saw that? And Jamie was very upset, saying that you could really mess with people's lives, my family's lives. And she's like, well, you'll need to come to my room and then I will give you the letter, you know. So that's how it went down in the book. But of course, on the show, it's a different story. And it kind of snowballs from the whole scene in the front yard where Jenny, you know, sets up the whole, you know, pretend betrayal of Jamie to the Redcoats, where they take him off because she supposedly sold him out for gold. And she tells him as they're dragging him away, I'll never forgive you. Well, apparently that was the last time they spoke. While he was in jail, well, you know, there wouldn't be any real way they could correspond while he's in jail. That's not how jail back then is not like jail now. Not like he could pick up the phone and say and call Lallybroch Collect, you know. It doesn't work like that. So, you know, and even when he got on the estate, the Hellwater estate, he didn't write home. You know, apparently he and Jenny are on the outs. That's very sad. So he's been there for years now. And literally Jenny and Jamie have not been in touch with each other for like 10 years. 10 years. So he's getting ready to go back home now after having had no contact for 10 years. That's going to be interesting. So we will see how that goes. How many? Anybody want to guess how many kids Jenny had in them 10 years? Probably about five, maybe 10. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Next episode of Whiskey and Freedom and Whiskey is going to be really good. It's going to be really good. It's going to be so good because there's going to be something that's going to happen. And I'm really looking forward to a lot of fans' reaction to it. A lot of non-book readers. I'm so looking forward to that. But anyway, I've gotten off topic. Let me wrap this up before I pass out. So, oh my God, I can't recall where I was. I think I was talking about Jamie saying he lost people. Okay. So he's trying to explain to Willie how he's praying and how stinking papists pray. So Willie decides he wants to become a stinking papist too. Jamie christens him by making the sign of the cross on his forehead, giving him the name William James. Willie says, "That's not my name." And Jamie's like, "Well, that's your new name, because papists get a new name when they become papists." So Willie is excited that now he's a stinking papist. Okay. All right. So we're back in 1764 Scotland. It's nighttime. And Jamie is in his room and he's taking out his candles and his figurine so that he can set it up to do his prayers. But there's a knock at the door. He immediately puts his figurine away. And Willie comes in and Jamie's like, "What are you doing here?" And Willie is like, "I just came to see you. Can I stay for a bit?" And Jamie's like, "Okay, for a bit." So Willie closes the door, comes in. And Jamie continues to set up his little candles and his figurine. And Willie looks at it and he goes, "My grandma says that only stinking papists burn candles in front of heathen images." And Jamie smirks and he says, "Well, I'm a stinking papist, but that's no heathen." And he points to the figurine and he says, "That's Saint Paul, I think, patron saint of lost things." I think he said St. Paul, St. Anthony, I guess. The patron saint of lost things. Then he proceeds to light his candles and he said, "I light a candle for everyone I've lost." And Willie said, "Who did you lose?" And Jamie says, "My brother, my sister, my godfather, and my wife." And Willie's like, "You don't have a wife." Jamie's like, "Not anymore." Now, what struck me about this scene is when he said his sister. And I'm like, what does he mean, his sister? Because, I mean, okay. And I'm saying this because in the book, Jamie and Jenny are corresponding with each other while he's on this, while he's doing this groomsman's job, and they're writing letters back and forth. And one of the things that a lot of fans complained about with this story is that they changed a lot of stuff from how it happened in the book. In the book, instead of Geneva blackmailing Jamie by saying that Lord Milton told her about him and who he was, what happens was that Jamie had been, you know, sneaking letters out and letting, like, I think, like, some gypsy post send the letters home to Lallybroch. And that is how Jenny knew where he was. And they were corresponding back and forth the whole time he was there. And one of the letters was intercepted by Geneva. And she told him that she had the letter and that there were some interesting things in it, and what would her father say if he saw that. And Jamie was very upset, saying that you could really mess with people's lives, my family's lives. And she's like, "Well, you'll need to come to my room and then I will give you the letter," you know. So that's how it went down in the book. But of course on the show, it's a different story. And it kind of snowballs from the whole scene in the front yard where Jenny, you know, sets up the whole, you know, pretend betrayal of Jamie to the redcoats, where they take him off because she supposedly sold him out for gold. And she tells him as they're dragging him away, "I'll never forgive you." Well, apparently, that was the last time they spoke
Apparently, while he was in jail, well, you know, there wouldn't be any real way they could correspond while he's in jail. That's not how jail back then is not like jail now. Not like he could pick up the phone and say and call Lollibrock Collect, you know. It doesn't work like that. So, you know, and even when he apparently even when he got on the estate, the Hellwater estate, he didn't write home. You know, apparently he and Jenny are on the outs. That's very sad. So he's been there for years now. And there has so literally Jenny and Jamie have not been in touch with each other for like 10 years. 10 years. So he's getting ready to go back home now after having had no contact for 10 years. That's going to be interesting. So we will see how that goes. How many? Anybody want to guess how many kids Jenny had in them 10 years? Probably about five, maybe 10. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Next episode of Whiskey and Freedom and Whiskey is going to be really good. It's going to be really good. It's going to be so good because there's going to be something that's going to happen. And I'm really looking forward to a lot of fans' reaction to it. A lot of non-book readers. I'm so looking forward to that. But anyway, I've gotten off topic. Let me wrap this up before I pass out. Oh my God, I can't recall where I was. I think I was talking about Jamie saying he lost people. Okay. So he's trying to explain to Willie how he's praying and how stinking papists pray. So Willie decides he wants to become a stinking papist too. Jamie christens him by making the sign of the cross on his forehead, giving him the name William James. Willie says, "That's not my name." And Jamie's like, "Well, that's your new name because papists get a new name when they become papists." So Willie is excited that now he's a stinking papist. So after that scene, we start hearing the beginning lines of the song that plays the show out, which is "A Hard Rain's Gonna Come." Now, I'll be honest, I've never heard this song before. I'm not a young girl, so, you know, I should be ashamed because after hearing it the first time on the show, I went back and played it and really liked it. It's very beautiful, lovely, beautiful lyrics. I played both versions, the original version and the one by the people that sing it in the show, because this version is by someone else. Don't ask me details. Look, I'm too sleepy to give you details right now. But as this song plays, the scene switches to Jamie getting ready to leave. I forgot to tell y'all that at the end, after he baptizes or christens Willie, he gives Willie the snake Sawney that he had carved. That's what we saw in the title card. Jamie carving a pet snake, not Sawney, but carving a pet snake for Willie and giving it to him. And he had etched Willie's name on the back. And he said, "This is for you to remember me by." And Willie likes it. And he says, "But I have nothing to give you to remember me by." And of course, Jamie says, "I will always remember you. I could never forget you." So then that's when we switch to the next scene when he's leaving. Lord John, Elizabeth, and Willie are out front. Jamie puts his hand on Willie's head and touches it gently. Elizabeth gives Jamie a hug and she whispers in his ear, "We'll take care of your son." Ooh, Jamie's face gets so tight at that, like he's holding in those tears. And he looks at Lord John and gives him a nod, and Lord John nods back. Then he turns and walks off. And in this part, they're switching back and forth, 68 back to Jamie's time, 67, I think, 1767, and going back to 1968 with Claire and Bree. As Bree and Claire are leaving, it starts out with Claire taking down the bulletin board with all of the clues and stuff on it. And
just kind of, you know, being reflective as she's packing her stuff up. And then we have a scene where Bree walks with her bags in tow, you know, looking around, seeing that everything's been cleared out. Then we see Roger sitting in a chair playing with his little toy airplane that he used to play with when he was a little boy. And he's kind of looking sad and reflective and probably missing Bree that he was hopeful that something would happen with. But she kind of left a little too soon for that to kick off. And then we see Claire and Bree on the plane. And the whole time this song is playing, it's really, really very emotional, emotional effect with that song playing. A hard rain's gonna come. I'm not gonna try to sing it, sorry. But anyway, then we switch back to Jamie riding on the horse, leaving Willie and Lord John and Elizabeth are standing there watching after him. And then Willie just kind of breaks out running toward the horse. Don't go, Mac, don't go. Lord John chases him and catches him. And Jamie looks so, oh, his face is just so tight. But he doesn't turn around. He just keeps going. And then we end the show, and that's it. This was a great episode. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, like I said in my recap, my quick recap, this was probably the best episode yet this season, in my opinion. I know a lot of people giving their recaps and opinions about the show, where, especially book readers, they just didn't like the fact that a lot of things were changed, like with the whole Geneva thing and the letter. But I think as I was recapping that I realized now why they changed it. They're doing something with the whole Jenny and Jamie not speaking for 10 years thing. That's not how it went down in the book. But it went down that way on the show. And I think that it's going to have a significant plot device for when the next episode airs, when they meet again, because again, they have not been in touch. When Jenny was in that yard, she said, "I'll never forgive you." And well, I guess we'll see, won't we, when he comes back to Lollybrock. So we'll see that in the next episode. All right, and we're done. I am going to bed. Thank you guys for listening. Catch you again on Sunday when we do the quick recap of Freedom and Whiskey. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.